Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Italy are the European champions. It's Monday, 12th of July. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Vidushan Hantaraja.
We didn't make it easy for them. We pushed them all the way.
Yeah. Difficult.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So there's that feeling again because Italy, of course, beat England on penalties after a one-all draw, in case you didn't know.
Yeah.
In case we're... you shouldn't use us as breaking news. We haven't said that many times over the years.
Imagine flicking the Football Ramble on this morning and going, I wonder what...
I love their output so much, yeah. I want them to tell me
on
what
that
happened.
Note, welcome to the Premier League preview show.
Dawn, did you know the game was yesterday?
I think it's... Would it be only a couple of weeks until the magnificent Gorgie boys are back on?
only you would know that. Listen, if you don't know, then we don't know.
The thing that's upset me the most about England's loss to Italy last night is the fact that we no longer have a 100% record in finals.
Yes.
England's 55-year wait for a major trophy goes on. It will be at least 56 years.
And a half.
Yeah. Of course, which is why I say... you've got to go in on the UEFA Nations League.
that's why Marcus is such an international football mentality monster, because only a couple of minutes in, he's going, right, next tournament.
Yeah, next
move
one.
Move on to the next thing.
Next one.
You're like a little England pig and you've got your nose looking for truffles.
I was going to call you the international football Tiger Woods, but I don't know.
An England international football pig.
International football fan Tiger Woods.
That's fine. Whatever it is. I mean, Italy, they won their second Euros. Of course, it's their sixth major trophy. And what a story they have. But we'll come on to them in a short while, of course. I mean, it was quite something. I was at the match, seeing England in a final, all the pomp and ceremony before the game. And I remember thinking, I've never seen this before an England game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You normally do it yourself, don't you?
It's a big blow-up trophy thing there.
It's weird because like opening ceremonies are quite frustrating at the best of times.
Yeah.
And, you know, you watch a final as a neutral and there is that pleasure in that as an England fan, so you know that there's two of the best teams. But then with your team in it, you're like, fucking hell, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Get that little car off there. Yeah. I even turn against the car. Beautiful little gay car.
I was like, oh, come on, get on with it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Because it is tense. I mean, you know, I use a lot of nervous energy throughout the day.
Yeah.
I went for like a 7-mile walk in the morning. and it just the day just dragged. And then when you get all that stuff before, and obviously I'm very grateful that I was able to watch it in the final, but all that stuff seems to go on for quite a long time.
Oh, it did, yeah.
And you just kind of think, who is this really for, other than the kind of dignitaries that are up in that executive box or whatever? I know everyone else just wants to play the fucking game.
It's I feel like we should have had, like, Spain sat next to us in some way, almost like telling us how to use the cutlery. Is that right? You start from the outside
here. Yeah.
The soup spoon. Yeah. It's like, right, okay.
Yeah. And then you'll be disappointed because dessert is a penalty loss. I know what you mean. The Italy first team to win two penalty shootouts in the same European Championship. And people, a friend of mine said, well, if it goes to penalties, you know, no team of, yes, but they have at World Cups.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you can isolate the European Championships, but actually you should extrapolate that out to international tournaments.
You were right to point it out like a week or so ago. Like it's such a cherry picked stat. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
They've got Donnarumma in goal. The man is a wall. Okay. Yeah. But there we are. But England, the game began, of course, and England played a 3-4-3. And I, you know, Southgate surprised me with the 3-4-3. I'm generally not a fan of it. And I thought to myself, okay, he's obviously worried about Italy. They are the best side that England will have faced, of course, at this tournament. And you know, Italy have been the best side at this championship. You can't really argue too much with that, I don't think. I mean, obviously, Spain will have felt that they maybe should have done more in the semi-final. But over seven games, if you have to scrape and battle your way through and you get through, you have to give kudos there. But England start with the 3-4-3. What did you make of that? Did you sort of think, ooh, it's a little bit conservative? No, I understand.
I mean, after 2 minutes, I was broadly in favour of it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Welcome to a tea.
Yeah.
So, just a bit, having been able to think about this overnight, one of the things that I kind of ascertained from the 4-3-3 was that it was done, as Luke pointed out on the Saturday show, to basically just cluster them in the middle as best as possible. But I think in the... Without going down the stereotypical route of saying we scored too early, I think they were surprised at how early they scored and therefore found themselves in this weird bind where they were trying to do something to Italy that Italy weren't even doing.
Yep.
Because England controlled those 20 minutes so well. Mm-hmm. And I think they, I mean, I'd love to, well, I'd have to watch it back. But part of me felt in the moment that I think they seem in a little bit of a halfway house here because I feel like they could have created a little bit more when they had the ball, but they were stuck in their positions. And because Italy was so, I suppose, shell-shocked at the beginning, that there was nothing to counter. That 3-4-3 works really well, as it did for the goal, when people are pushing onto you, and then you have basically three different outlets, you know, through the middle or out wide.
Well, we saw Germany do that to Portugal.
Yeah.
When the ball's coming in, man at the back post, bang, which is exactly what the first goal was.
Yeah, so... And then, because
we've heard the word overload a lot in this tournament, haven't we?
We have
control overload
and transitions
and
whatever.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I mean, I wouldn't know how he would have done it per se, but I wondered if we could have had an in-game tweak even then. Think actually, we're all over these. 10 minutes, let's go 4-3-3. 5 minutes, let's go 4-3-3. Mm-hmm. Let's see what we can pick off from them. But again, I'm just wise after the event. I think it showed how Southgate was a bit late to react in the second half. Well, I mean, he didn't react in the second half, in my opinion, and it just made the whole thing seem a little bit more clustered.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, Luke, isn't it? When you, I don't go in for the whole you've scored too early. That's a very English thing to say. I think you get a goal, you get the goal kind of thing. But it was always going to be difficult to shut Italy out for sort of 88 minutes or whatever it would be. Get to half time and then maybe rethink. How did you see it play out?
Well, I think people say, oh, you score too early. It needs to be contextualised. And the context of this is that England scored when they scored, and it meant that they didn't kind of, for me, they didn't feel like they executed their plan. Mm-hmm. I think you would have got a better chance of England executing their plan because it's the plan they've used throughout the tournament if it had been 0-0 after 60 minutes because they didn't know whether to come or go after they scored. And I think what we saw was that I've been in support of Southgate, as I think we all have more broadly, but hopefully you'll forgive me for saying this. Throughout the tournament, I've said, look, he knows what he wants to do and this is what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. It didn't mean it was going to work, didn't mean they were going to win, but and I think actually whatever happened against Italy last night, Italy were the better team. But what he's done so far is he's got it to wherever it's got it 60 odd minutes in, and he's brought subs on to try and try and kind of affect the game because they've got a deep bench and because they can present different challenges to other teams' defences. Now, of course, sometimes you don't need to do that. Against Ukraine, didn't need to do that. But against Denmark, it worked fairly well. They're in control of the game, and it worked well against Germany. I don't like the 3-4-3 either. I mean, people will say, I'll roll their eyes and go, yeah, well, you can say that the day after a game. We did an England, a nine-part England show leading up to storm and turn everyone we didn't like 3-4-3 every fucking week. So I felt like it gives them an overload in the middle. You're relying on players like Mount and Kane to drop in. I understand that if you matched them with a 4-3-3, he feels like a little, they played 3-4-3 against Germany because they matched them because they thought they were better. They're not better than Italy. And what this comes down to, I think, is if you're not better than the team you're playing against, you've got to think of a way of solving that puzzle. Mm. And I don't know if England have shown that they can solve that kind of puzzle throughout this tournament. And thus it came to pass. Mm-hmm. On Saturday, and on Friday as well, I think, but particularly on Saturday, that was the show I was on. We talked about the best chance England have is to match Italy as much as they can in those strong areas. It's to defend really well against those three buzzy little forwards, which I think they did actually quite well.
Yeah.
And then beat them at fullback. At fullback, Emerson and Lorenzo, I don't want to take anything away from them because they're European champions and good for them. They're ordinary players. Mm. England are much better in that area.
Spinazzola was a huge miss.
Massive loss.
Yeah.
And you don't need to take my word for it. It worked in the first 10 or 15 minutes. It was constant the amount of space they were getting. Mm. And I felt like they didn't quite have the problem-solving ability to break Italy down properly and kind of dictate the play. And very, very quickly, it looked like to me England tried to play the same way they played against other teams that aren't as good as Italy.
Yeah.
And Italy are a half a second quicker closing down an angle, half a second quicker to snap into a tackle. Mm. And England couldn't up their game and they couldn't adjust. So if you're in a position where you can't be quicker and you can't adjust how you play, you're going to come off a second best. And ultimately, that's essentially what happened.
Yeah. I mean, Italy, they've had a long tournament, extra time and so on and whatnot, and played better teams than England, you would say, certainly in the knockouts. And for a team who beats a stubborn Austria side, people say, went to extra time, they won. A Belgium side and then a very good Spain side who really peaked in that semi-final. And then, of course, beat the hosts. Playing at home. They deserve their gold medals. But there were shades of Russia 2018 in that the draw was kind to England and it opened up. And I said at the time, and I've said recently, I remember thinking England should get to a semi-final here, which was, that was progression. Hadn't been to a semi-final since, the 90s. And they did. But when they came up against the Kenya side, a bit more of a streetwise side, then they came unstuck. And it was, and you saw that. Southgate had really studied that and he thought, okay, we're learning lessons. We've learned lessons, but you're always learning. And it was similar to what happened there in that the draw opens up and you think England should get to the final. They get to the final, they play perhaps a more scannier side, a little bit more streetwise side. And there were shades of that England, a few long balls, a few hurried clearances. Italy had, 60-odd% possession. They were closing down the angles. And not as strong as it's been in the past, but there was a hint of the bad old England.
Yeah, definitely. There were a few Harry Maguire passes that stick in the mind that I think I thought about when I closed my eyes last night and when I opened them again this morning. I think one of the things that was a huge blow for me was the injury to Phil Foden, because there was a moment.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
There was a moment about 65 minutes, 70 in, where, and it was perhaps a 15-20 minute period where Italy completely flipped the possession stats.
Yeah.
And I think a stat came up on TV that said something like they had like 70% possession in the last 10 minutes. Mm. And they obviously went on to get however much by the end of the game. And I think what England really struggled with was when they tried to move the ball quickly, but it's not just passing to move the ball quickly. And what Foden gives you, especially in that central area, is he gives you that big player vibe of carrying the ball forward and then passing the ball forward.
Yeah.
I think that was a problem all night.
Vic. I agree with you.
I think even in the first half, you look at it and you go, okay, on paper, come what may, England were 30 minutes away from winning the major tournament, right? Mm-hmm. In the first half, I thought the coverage of how England played in that first half was way over the top.
Well, I watched that back and the pundits were purring.
What were they saying?
They were saying that it was, you know, so far so good, job well done, all the rest of it. Actually, what I saw, and I've seen this throughout the tournament from England, but the difference being that the teams England have played haven't been as good as them. They overplay the ball all the time.
Yeah.
They don't release the ball quick enough. They show good feet in tight areas, but ultimately it becomes completely pointless because they get caught in possession or they give the ball away. Or that. And it was all of that, like being, it was like that last night throughout the game, really. Like, it was like being visited by the ghost of tournament past by the end of it. I mean, what, I mean, it was. Yeah. The shape went, the discipline went. You could see them. You, if you watch a game closely of
that
magnitude.
The shape was there, which is why Italy didn't really create much.
The shape was there for part of the game.
The shape was there, but I think it was a little bit too deep as well.
Okay, yeah,
very deep,
okay, okay.
And a lot of defending became quite last ditch.
Yeah,
which doesn't necessarily mean, in my opinion, you've got a great shape. Mm-hmm. And I think if you watch the game closely, a game of this magnitude, you can watch the pendulum swing, the momentum flows. Yeah. That's why I thought, for example, what Chiesa did when he seemed to act like he thought Italy were winning the game when it was 1-1. He went down for ages.
Yeah.
Just couldn't decide whether he wanted to come off or not.
Yeah,
trotted around, walked here, there and everywhere, slowed it down. And Italy were miles on top. If I was Chiellini at that point, I'd have been shaking him, saying, what he did is he gave the momentum back to England for about 5 minutes. Yeah. But because England's shape was so poor, they lost it again. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get a grip on the game. They for the first 10 or 15 minutes, they were pretty good. Italy got massively caught napping, and it was probably the best thing that happened.
But the home team as well, it's always going to be the momentum. And
Mancini changes it.
Yeah.
England win that. England score that goal. Mm. To use that word again, there's overloads on both flanks. Mm-hmm. Shaw's a great finish from a brilliant ball over. And you can see Mancini go, right, okay, we're vulnerable here in these areas, and he changed it. And Southgate wasn't able to change it. That's not me saying I don't think Southgate's worthy of whatever he's achieved. He's done brilliantly. They've been a good team. They're the second best team in this tournament, but he wasn't able to change the situation for England and wrestle control back of the game. That's ultimately why they lost. Mm-hmm. This game last night was a battle between the two best teams in the tournament to find out who was best. Yeah. And Italy were best, and they should be congratulated.
And I think that's one of the sort of things that actually, when the game finished, obviously went to penalties and all, I just remember sitting there thinking, you've got to be philosophical. Because, my goodness, as an England fan, you get plenty of opportunities to do so. And I just thought, the best team has won this tournament. And their story is incredible. The way Mancini himself, when he took over Italy. Italy had been terrible. First round of the 2014 World Cup, same group as England, of course, despite beating England at that tournament. They went out the first round. 2018 didn't even qualify for the World Cup there. 2016, in between Euros, did okay. Did a great win against Spain, if my memory serves me well. Conte was in charge, but lost on penalties to Germany, and they would have been very disappointed. He picked that team up, and the spirit they've shown throughout the tournament has been magnificent. And also as well, one thing actually that has been interesting is people might say, play your way into a tournament, and as France have shown and as Portugal have shown, even though Portugal was perhaps by sort of attrition and bit of good fortune rather than management. Nobody judges or will get three draws and go through into 2016. Yeah. But play your way into the tournament. Actually, Italy hit the ground running the way they beat Turkey. Okay, Turkey with the whipping boys, but they were great throughout the tournament. And it was only against Spain where they needed to show a bit of character, which they did and went through. But Mancini as well, he remembers Wembley as a Sampdoria player when they were beaten by Barcelona, of course. So he's got his own little narrative there. As Lombardo and Viali were in that side as well on the bench. So it is an incredible story with this Italian side. Of course, England's narrative was with Southgate, with the penalties, with all that kind of stuff. And I said on the show a day or two ago, whenever it was, that if England lose to Italy on penalties, I don't think it will be a disaster like it was in the past. And I genuinely think that, actually. I understand that this is, penalties again and so on, but I just feel that when Italy equalised, I thought to myself, the problem is with the dynamic, it really is quite set now. And to try and reverse that is going to be difficult. And when Italy equalised, I thought penalties might be England's best bet here. And I don't fancy us on penalties because of big Donnarumma in goal. Now, the fact is that Pickford saved as many as Donnarumma in the penalty shootout. It was, of course, Rashford who
Pickford, who was brilliant yesterday.
He was brilliant.
I was so impressed with him. Even the goal he conceded.
Well, even the goal. People said, could he have done better?
Yeah, brilliant save.
I thought it was a great save onto the post, yeah.
Look, I think.
I've said a lot there.
No, you're right. You're right to pick up on that, Fish. I think, but by probably about maybe 45 minutes in the semi-final, where he's a little bit shaky. I think he's been outstanding. I think you'd have to be really nitpicky I don't know, maybe that is the role of the show. I don't know how to do that. So you got to talk about something. Yeah. You have to be really nitpicky though to criticise the team that England have put out and what they've been able to achieve. They've been the second best team in a tournament. Only one team can win it, and that's just the fact of the matter. Italy are a very good team. To people coming into this tournament, I mean, I can't really remember. I might have even been one of them saying that they don't have any standout kind of world class players. I mean, you'd have to question that.
I mean,
now.
Jorginho's won the Champions League at Chelsea, and he's just won.
Well, Donnarumma's been,
Donnarumma's the best goalkeeper you could argue in the world. I mean, the two centre backs, they may be getting on a bit in years, but my goodness, Bonucci
England, and that's the thing, right? That is absolutely right to point that out. They both picked up yellows, and they weren't really put on. I thought Kane did a brilliant job occupying them in the first half.
Yeah.
But with those two, you have to drag them into places they don't want to go.
Yeah.
That's why Spain had so much joy. We said that again. Sorry to keep going on about it. We said that on Saturday. You either need to pull them into areas they don't want to be in. And I think Rio Ferdinand pointed out in the pre-match build-up, talking about how Spain were able to score their goal by dragging Chiellini out. I think
Olmo is a false nine. Was that? Yeah.
Or you need to, pull them out into wide areas. Because they don't want to be there, or you need to make them run back towards their goal. If the game's entirely in front of them, they'll dominate.
But do you think, though, that there has been a bit of criticism over Southgate, the team selection, and the substitutes, but the boldness. Do you think that England could have been a bit bolder-ish? Do you know what I mean? Is that the regret? Because I sort of think to myself, you know what, I think whatever England would have done, I think it would have probably sort of played out similarly to what it did. But people go, no, we could have gone the front, a bit of pace on the wings, like run at the defenders and so on. It's easier said than done. Sometimes when you say, well, just go at them, you think, well...
They're starved of the ball. That's the problem.
But do you think there's regret there with England?
Maybe, but it's not up to them, is it? There's another team playing as well. And they've got two-thirds of the ball. And people will say stuff like that. And they'll say stuff like, oh, well, I'd rather we got beat 4-1 than tried. People say that until they get fucking beat 4-1. This is a disgrace. We're in a final. We've embarrassed ourselves.
No, of course.
It's fine margins, isn't it?
But what do you think? Yeah. Do you look at that and you think, but maybe could have made maybe could have been on the front foot a bit more. Maybe played a 4-3-3 and try and... That goal that England scored against Denmark, of course it was an own goal, but that slipped from Saka to Raheem Sterling. We never really saw much of that. They didn't have a lot of pace at the back, Italy.
I did think that in the opening 15 minutes where Kane decided to turn into Pirlo, and I thought, he's playing those kind of passes, we need to give him those kind of options, and then thought, well, actually, where are they going to come from? Because Trippier's not always going to make that run. And it was interesting, for the Trippier goal, Kyle Walker bust a gut to get down on the outside. But even within that, we were shown the effort. It had to be on a counter. It had to be on the left, moving to the right, and it had to be the quickest bloke on the pitch, bombing down. And so in that regard, yes, maybe in hindsight, I wouldn't have said that, I didn't say that before. But I would say it's a lesson to take forward. Absolutely. I think one of the things that's been quite interesting in this tournament is that you can have structure, you can have discipline, but within those parameters, you can also impart pace, you can impart a bit of ingenuity. And that's what Italy have done, really. I see that Italian team, and I think, we talk about, I wrote in one of my previews, Insigne and Chiesa, they almost use the touchline as tight ropes in a wrestling ring, just bouncing off it and flinging inside. But everything around them is structured. Even Immobile is just in the middle. I'm going to be this. I'll be with the centre backs. I'll be, I'm here if you need me.
Yeah.
But basically, do your thing. The middle three. What's really cool, actually, is we touched on a bit with what you said about Mancini. He's done a lot of similar things that Southgate has done in terms of...
Oh, it's similar. It's quite a mirroring of the story.
Yeah. Even right down to, you obviously named the high-profile names there, but it's quite cool that Immobile, Verratti and Insigne were all part of a 2011 team for Pescara, who won promotion. This has been something that's been bubbling on for a while that people haven't necessarily been open to in Italy, and it's quite cool that it's coming to the fore at the moment. And you look at that core there, and so what? Berardi's 26. You've got Locatelli. You've got
Barella,
Chiesa, Barella, and Donnarumma as well. There is a pretty special thing happening there that has just snuck up on us all. And while they're going to go on their own journey, I think England's next step is for Southgate to learn from this. And I know we'll talk about it in the second half of the show, but I do think there needs to be a bit more.
They have to learn
a bit more on the front foot.
Yeah, I mean they did learn from Russia.
They have no right to be dictators.
You're right. Sorry to cut in. Just on that, people think it was a bit of a below par Italian side. It wasn't. Just because you haven't got some of the huge names of the past. Yeah. But to be honest with you, you could say that about England, you could say that about
so
many other
sides. Hardly anyone knows how good teams are.
Exactly.
Like, especially in international tournaments, because most people don't watch fucking football until the international tournament comes along.
Yeah, absolutely. But on the sort of the learning front, I do think that England did learn from Russia. But you have to remember that Mancini is much longer coaching career than, say, someone like Southgate.
Yeah, and I think England's path to the final this year was tougher than in 2018. And I think if you take the fact that they've gone 5 years since being knocked out by Iceland and being really the deer of the England team in this generation, in 5 years are now, you know, half an hour away from winning something. That's a journey to be celebrated.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, we have to get over this. And I know that you and Andy, we talked about it, you, me and Andy on the show before, Marcus, and you guys can't disagree with me. But the point I was making then, and I'll kind of make it again now, maybe I'll make it better. Who knows? Probably not. But it's that it's all very well to be, the mood in the camp is great. Everyone gets on really well. We've instilled a culture. Let's get some pool inflatables out. That's all good. And the culture is really important because the culture wasn't there before.
Yep.
But the whole point of the culture is to win things.
Of course.
And the whole point of a final is to win it. And England weren't able to do it last night because Italy were better and because, unfortunately, it gives me no pleasure to say it, Gareth Southgate and Steve Holland were outcoached by Roberto Mancini and his team because Mancini was able to change it during the game and give the momentum to Italy, and they were able to get over the line and England weren't. Now,
I mean, it was still 1-1 after 120
minutes. It was, and I was going to say, if England were to win it on penalties, I'd have felt a little bit like, do you remember when in Euro 2012 we took Italy to penalties and they dominated the game?
Yeah.
And
they
thought, this will be an absolute robbery.
Oh, but 2012 was very different.
Similar energy, though. Italy were the better team then and they were the better team last night.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the penalties. We have to talk about the penalties. I mean, like I say, with Donnarumma in goal and with the takers that Italy had, you know, Trippier would have been one to take one, for example. You know, for England, it wasn't on the pitch. You know, it started, you know, Kane waxes in and Maguire's penalty was magnificent.
That, by the way, you can't overstate how good that penalty
was.
He smashed the camera.
Absolutely.
I like the fact, because the camera in that corner distorts everything. You know, it's like those mirrors you get.
Like a fisheye lens. Yeah,
and it makes your head look bigger than it is. And I wonder if he thought, well, that's doing me no favours.
Yeah, sure.
Take that out for a start.
Finally take it back. Get my revenge on that fucker.
But even when Pickford saved, I did think to myself, I will not celebrate until, you know, if England win, kind of thing, because there was so much more to go.
And the nerve of Pickford.
Well, I mean, Jorginho should have been sent off. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, without a doubt.
100%. I cannot believe he never got sent off. But there we are. It's all futile now. And this is also futile, and it's not even a consolation, but I'm glad Pickford saved his penalty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
It's not necessarily that's a really important point, I think, because what tends to happen, you guys have talked about, or you've at least alluded to talk about the penalties, talking about the fact that, really, any right-thinking person, you're going to get fucking dickheads, obviously. You're always going to get dickheads. Yeah. But the attitude towards penalty takers for England has changed. In the 90s, Southgate was a pariah. Mm-hmm. Beckham for getting sent off against Argentina was a pariah. It's all about blaming individuals. Mm. Well, actually, it's a mirroring now of how the fact that we don't put all our hopes on one player anymore. You've got that Grealish thing, but he's a fairly peripheral player in real terms. And so I don't really think we'll see the wider community who support football in England blame these penalty takers individually. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, someone's got to step up and take them, and so we have to understand that if you start bringing these variables in, I know I talk about this a lot, and you start mucking around, it's gonna come back and bite you at some point. Mm-hmm. I feel like the way the penalties were taken, and the people who were selected to take the penalties, to me, easy for me to say from the sidelines, it felt like the wrong decision at the time, and it feels like the wrong decision now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that Raheem Sterling didn't take one before, because he has taken penalties at club level, and he took one, I think, in the UEFA Nations League. And again, you can tell, it's still that thing. I think Saka's only taken one for Arsenal at youth level. And
to give him the fifth, after the way he performed, I've got nothing against him. He seems like a great kid, and he's got an amazing future.
Sure.
He was poor last night, and that's a polite way of saying it. He was poor. And I think the occasion got to him. Well, actually, that's probably unfair. I don't know why he was poor, but he was. I thought his contribution was poor. For him to step up and take a pivotal fifth penalty at his age, with the performance he's just put in, I thought was disrespectful to him and was a dereliction of duty. And I don't want to criticise Southgate untowardly, because I think it's unfair to do so. But for him to come out and say, well, he's looked really good in training, is, I think, is a really, really poor explanation.
Yeah.
To be able to adapt to situations.
You do. Well, yeah. I mean, I suppose, though, once you've taken your fifth, once you've got your selection of takers, then you don't change them.
So that's but the thing is, he's working them out. England took absolutely ages to work out who their penalty takers were. Mm. Let's get that right.
They've been planning this for 2 years.
Italy was bang, 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 bang. They were ready.
Yeah.
England took ages.
Yeah.
He obviously was unsure because he took ages.
Yeah. Well, he brought Sancho and Rashford on, who obviously both missed.
Sure. But that's interesting as well.
I want to talk about that as well, actually.
Fine. Very quickly, though, I just wanted to say that you can't see Saka play the way he played and say, The most important penalty of the lot at the fifth one, and if he misses it, England don't win a final for the first time in half a century, and you think that's still the right decision. Mm. You have to know when you're selecting your players that the fifth penalty could be really important, yet they still give it to him. I thought you never know what condition people are in physically and mentally, and it's difficult from the sidelines. I was disappointed Sterling didn't step up. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed a more experienced player didn't step up. And I think it was the wrong call. And I thought that at the time, and I still think it's the wrong call now.
Well, yeah. I mean, when Saka stepped up, you know, when Pickford saved Jorginho's penalty, I just thought it delayed the inevitable, to be honest.
Yeah.
And when
it felt like that.
Yeah, and when Saka stepped up, I thought there's no way he's scoring.
Yeah, I suppose it speaks of what we mentioned before about Mancini and Southgate. I feel like Southgate knows the personality of his players better than Mancini, and Mancini trusts the talent of his players.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, let's start with Sancho and Rashford. I understand bringing on players to take penalties is pretty common practice. What I don't get is leaving it so late and therefore enhancing the pressure on them. I think at least give them 10 minutes in the second half of extra time whereby it's not so obvious to them, or rather not so, I don't know, it feels like it would soften the blow of being brought on to take a penalty to think, okay, try and affect the game in 10 minutes, but, you know, you're going to be one of our penalty takers.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it helps the mentality a bit, puts them slightly at ease.
For me, Vish, and I can't say this enough, and I know we have to go to the break, like, I can't stress it enough. Right? People need to understand the whole genesis of what a penalty actually is. The whole genesis of what a penalty is you are an attacking player.
Yeah, yeah.
You've been impinged or fouled or stopped unfairly. So we are going to give you an advantage, which generally speaking is going to result in a goal, right? So all the advantages with the attacking player, I don't know. And apart from the fact that it's the occasion, it's the mentality, I will never be able to replicate that in my own life. So I can't understand it. I can't fully empathize with it. But I don't know why the players... Rashford is an easy one to pick out because he's hit the post and he's missed. Now, he's missed. He's not hit the target, and that's not really something you can defend.
And he is a penalty taker.
He's a penalty taker.
He's a high-profile penalty taker.
Yeah.
What Rashford does is he... And Jorginho's the same, and he normally scores, but he missed last night. What Rashford does is he waits for the keeper, and then he puts it in the other corner.
But do you know what? He doesn't always do that.
No,
well, that's what he did last night.
Yeah, that's what he did last night, but he sometimes laces them.
My point is you don't need to do that. The advantage is already with you. I don't know why they're not doing what Harry Kane does. Maybe it's a poor example because he missed against Denmark, and I think he understands why he missed, and that's why he put it right last night.
Yep.
It's a process. Kane, in the post-match interview, was talking about process. Mm. Look at what Kane does. He does that little fucking trot, and he does it. It's exactly the same in principle as what Johnny Wilkinson used to do in rugby for England. And he was the best kicker in the world for ages because it was a metronomic thing.
But that process as well is what they used against Colombia in 2018. It was the you pick your spot and you take it. There's a word for it. I forget. You don't wait for the keeper. You know, it's almost like
they call it the man in the crowd, because that's what Johnny Wilkinson used to do. He used to pick a spot where he picked someone in the crowd,
right?
And because they were far away, he said he'd always look like his nan. So he'd pick out his nan.
Nice. But that's what they did against Colombia, and that's what Rashford did against Colombia, and what he normally does for Manchester United. And when he missed that, I thought,
But sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, it's Italy. We're kind of nitpicking here. Italy deserved to win it.
Yeah,
I'm disappointed in how it transpired. I thought England could have been better. They weren't. The penalty shootout was a penalty shootout. I don't want to blame people individually. I think we've moved beyond that. The consciousness has been raised as a society who support England about blaming individuals or relying on individuals to be successful for us. As Gareth Southgate said himself, you win and lose as a team, and I completely agree with that. But we got to pour over it some way.
So we have to talk
about what could have been better. So look, congratulations to Italy.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's have a quick break.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I had 2 get 1 free, and I picked up a little Argentinian, and
I ended up having to take a couple of free transfers.
It was one of Daniel's specials.
We were trying to get a couple of players in, top of my shopping list, but they were both free transfers.
You mean when you've made your name as a wheeler and dealer, there's not been much wheeling and dealing, you know?
Fuck off.
Don't say that, I'm a fucking football manager.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. I'll tell you something, after a tournament, especially with such heartbreak frequency...
Oh, we're back now.
It's so nice. Do you know, I never thought that hearing Harry Redknapp's voice would be just the tonic,
yeah.
To be quite frank. All right, everybody, it's time for emails.
An email from Gareth, not that one. He knows not to show his face here anymore. Yeah. I don't mean that.
Imagine it was actually him. I'm really proud of the players. Thanks for emailing in, Gareth. Yeah. Doing more media.
Yeah, it's Steve Holland, assistant to the manager.
There's so many things we could say about last night, but regardless of what happened, I'm so phenomenally proud of that group of players. Nobody could beat us in open play. We took the best side in the competition to penalties. Gareth Southgate and those players made us all believe, made us all feel something special, and after the last 15 months, it's exactly what we needed. Sure, it hurts now, but I've never felt like this watching England. I will defend Saka, Sancho and Rashford like they're my blood brothers for having the balls to stand up and take a pen. It hurts today, and it'll hurt tomorrow. September, we go again, and I absolutely want to be at Wembley to cheer them on against Andorra as we move into the next chapter. The rave isn't off. We're just having to listen to the fucking annoying adverts we can't skip.
What adverts are there at a rave? What kind of rave of Gareth?
Someone who hasn't played, hasn't signed up to Spotify.
Yeah, I've been at those parties.
So, it's interesting, Gareth's email, he says, I and those players, Gareth Southgate and those players have made this believe. Thanks for that, Gareth. Joel Cowles has also been in touch. Hello to you, Joe. Thank you very much for emailing. And he says, for nearly 30 years, supporting England has consumed my sporting passion. For the most part, the football and management has been an absolute shower of shite. However, it's been an amazing and strange journey. From Uri Geller to Eileen Drury.
Why is he getting a mention?
Again. Yeah. For Wembley toilet cubicles to oxygen tents. From Ulrika Johnson to Faria Alam. Dentist chairs. Metatarsals, the Capello Index, Baden-Baden, Wags, penalties, a Wally with a Brolly, pints of wine and waistcoats. Looking back, it's all been so surreal. Batshit crazy. It's been quite the ride. I hope this tournament will bring more people into the weird and wonderful world of supporting England.
I do love that. And I think one mustn't forget, you know, we can pore over the final as we did in the first half there. But what is football about? It's to give you a bit of cheer.
Yeah, of
because I was sitting in the stands in Italy celebrating, so and I just thought to myself, tomorrow the sun comes up or the clouds come out.
Yeah, it's raining.
You know, we go to work. Everything returns to me. It doesn't really make a difference. It gives you that nice warm glow, but it's the same glow that we had against Germany, that we had against Denmark, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and don't get me wrong, I'd have bloody loved it. Of course I wanted England to win, but this is what it's about. And my goodness, it's been great.
Yeah.
It has been great. Like, don't lose sight of that. Russia 2018, even though they only beat Tunisia, Panama and Sweden. I know we keep citing Russia 2018, but you have to remember that we've been doing this show since 2007.
This is our seventh tournament.
Yeah. Now, since then, up until Russia, it was shite.
Yeah.
It really, really was, because we go on about World Cup 90 and 96 because the two semi-finals, they were anomalies.
Yeah.
98 was nice for a moment or two, and 2002 nice for a moment or two, but really it wasn't. It's been drivel until Southgate came over.
Absolutely.
Came on board and has changed things.
He didn't come over, he is it? I think he is English. Yeah.
He came over here with his 3-4-3 of course you want to win it. You want to know what it's like to wake up the next morning and go, we're the bloody European champions, you know, something like that. But actually, it has been great, and that's what football's about.
We talked about the idea, and we've talked about this lots, where you say, when it comes to England and the major tournament, what's it actually all about? You've done a really good job of summing that up there. But what I would add to that is that when you're in the middle of an international tournament and you're supporting England, and you go to the pub to watch a game, or you know, you're doing whatever, you're at work, and you go home and you're looking forward to watching a match on the telly or whatever, and you look in the mirror and you think, do I sincerely believe that England could win this? And every single minute that you sincerely believe that England have got a chance of winning this tournament, and you genuinely feel it, is a victory to be an England fan.
Yeah.
And we've had more minutes of that in these last two tournaments than probably the last however many years of my life put together.
I mean, you probably go back to 2006 if you're being generous. For me, it was probably 2002, 2004. But it's been a long time since I've felt that.
Yeah, but I suppose the idea of the genuine, the minutes that you genuinely believe, if you like, I can't think of a good
But 2006 is 15 years ago.
Exactly. And 2002, I got to the quarterfinal. Once you're in the semi-final, you're part of this conversation,
totally.
Right? So to me, what Southgate's delivered to this team has been genuine hope and genuine belief. And you have to remember, and it's hard to remember this now, maybe you don't want to remember it because it's the morning after the night before. Like, only one team can win this tournament.
Yeah.
Only one.
And the best team in the tournament did win it. You don't always say about international tournaments. I mean, one sort of starts looking ahead. There's a lot of young players and in the side. And it does bode well for the future, you could say. I know that's not the way it always works out. But we do look ahead to Qatar. You know, it's a year and a half away. And I don't know, Vish, you know, there's only one player over 30, which is Kyle Walker, and presumably his pace won't drop off that much in a year and a half. You certainly hope not. But it's still a good, there's still hope.
Yeah, definitely. I think the we've joked before about how, you know, the England camp, it does look like, you know, the best lads' holiday, and obviously, you know, it comes to an end because the most important thing is winning, and they didn't win. But there's a kind of long term feel around the England team that I know we've mentioned it a few times in the past.
There's a bit of a template, do you think?
Well, it's more than a template, isn't it? Like so. A lot of the conversation around the England team recently has been how it's at odds with the current political landscape and how it's doing wonderful things for the country and the country's moving in a better place. And no, I don't really believe that. As I said off mic, I think if you need England doing well at a football tournament to you know, create this atmosphere,
we are buggered.
Then it's clearly not sustainable. Yeah. You know, we know that. We can't just... I was thinking, what if we win, would we have to... If we'd have won, would we have had to do what Trump did when he won the election and he just kept having rallies? Because he just had to... Right, how do we keep hold of this feeling? We've got no plan in place.
Another open top bus tour with the boys.
Yeah.
And that ended up with him completely trying to delegitimise the entire democratic process. Yeah. So, I mean, what are you going to do next then? Just pretend the rules are different. Yeah. Pick the ball up, throw it in the net. It's a goal! It's a fucking goal! You can't do that.
Sack and misses, they just stay where they are. Well, yeah. Another one was just taking
the downside of that outweigh the benefit.
You can't have 13 men on the pitch at once.
We're going to do our own tournament. We're going to do our own tournament.
To be fair, some of the scenes yesterday at Wembley was reminiscent of the White House. But what has been sustainable is that people want to play for England again.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's a friendly, people want to go. People feel part of it. There are Ben Whites.
Yes.
In the country right now, who think, fuck, he's watching me.
Yeah.
He is watching me. And that looks like the most...
Well, Conor Coady said it was the best 6 weeks of his life and he's not played a minute.
Well, and exactly, and that shows you, and that's one thing that you buy into.
Player of the tournament, Conor Coady.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's true. And the connection with the team and the fans again is there. And again, that's not just Southgate. Southgate is a huge part of that. But there's so much goes into it. We talk about Southgate, of course, he's the figurehead for this, understandably. There has been so much work go into this. And we used to pull our hair out, Luke, you know, years ago doing podcasts on this about, you know, there didn't seem to be too much joined up thinking. But actually the FA and the England camp have done a lot actually in recent years. And we're just seeing the fruits of that. And you want that great feeling among the players. You want them, as you say, to play for England again. Belgium have done not too dissimilar thing. You know, a lot of Belgian fans used to go, some of them would go and watch France, some would go and watch Netherlands. There wasn't that much interest in the national team. And they hosted Euro 2000 or co-hosted Euro 2000. And that didn't really get them going. And Belgium are a smaller country and they sort of come and go. And they have shone quite brightly in these last sort of couple of tournaments or whatever. But they've done it under different managers. I know Martinez has been in charge of this one and the last one, but it was other managers before. But that good feeling in the camp and the fans being engaged with the national team again, different to England, I understand, but the comparisons can be made, has carried over. So it doesn't mean to say that it's all doom and gloom. And even if Southgate, I mean, I would have very much thought he would be in charge in Qatar, but it's not like, oh, when he goes... This idea of parachuting the manager in, like England have done before, it seems to be the groundwork is there. Yeah. You look at the way players want to play for England. You look at the way, I can't remember if I mentioned it on the show or not, but there's been many articles in The Athletic and one or two other places written about how playing for England, some people say this about going to, not that I've been, of course, but some people might say this about going to, say, Oxford or Cambridge University or something like that. You have incredible tradition and credible history. You don't want to be feel excluded and feel small because of that history. You want to be inspired by it.
Yeah.
And there's something about having those traditions. Tradition and history and prestige in of itself is not a bad thing. How do you use that? England do have, quite the history in football. I understand not with victories, of course, but there is a rich history of football there. And Southgate has channeled that. And the FA are trying to channel that. For example, when they get given their international caps, they used to be sent them through the post.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And I'm sure...
It's a ceremony now, isn't it?
But there's a bit of a ceremony. You have former players handing the caps over. It's kind of like, you are welcome. Everyone is welcome into this thing. And be inspired. And you're a part of something that's bigger than yourself. But let it inspire you, not bring fear into you.
Yeah. And the difference with the Belgium thing is, Belgium, that good feeling in Belgium has been carried by some superstars.
Mm.
By some... really visible presences, I suppose, on global stages. You know, De Bruyne, Lukaku.
Yeah.
It's been a huge part of that. Hazard, of course, Courtois. With England, though, you feel like, and I'm only saying this because it happened with the England ODI squad last week, if there was, you know, ahead of that friendly against Andorra, if there was, you know, a spate of COVID cases and they all had to isolate and they had to bring in a completely new 23-man squad, they would all walk through that door and think, something as we mentioned on Saturday, I'm going to leave this cap in a better place. It might be my only one.
But not only that, I know what's expected of me.
Exactly.
I'm coming into it. And I criticise it in the first half, saying the culture is there for a reason. It clearly is there for a reason. It's a reason there, because we can get as high-minded about it as we want, but the reason that culture is being installed is because everyone there wants to win something, right? Yeah. So it is all linked.
Yeah, but your point is still valid.
Ultimately, now, for the first time, they're coming in, these new players, and they're going to know what's expected of them and what the culture dictates and what it means for them and how they have to adjust to it and how they have to kind of improve it. And like Vish says, mate, you know, leave the cap in a better place or the shirt in a better place than when they found it. And talking about this England team and this England squad, you know, being this, you know, the cure for all society's ills in this country, and Vish is absolutely right to point that out as being nonsense. It is nonsense, but not only that, it misses the point. The point isn't that. The point is, this is a group of young men, and I'm sure it'll be the same for the women's squad as well next year. This is a group of young men who are showing that they're diverse, that they're respectful, that they can carry themselves with great dignity and pride and professionalism, and the dedication it takes to get to the level they've got to is something to be aspired to and something to be admired. And it might not be as a footballer, because not everyone, or hardly anyone, gets to play football at a professional level. But if you can take those principles of how you carry yourself and how professional you are and how respectful you are and how grateful you are to be where you are and how humble you can be, and you can apply those to whatever profession you've chosen yourself, it's a great example to be set. That wasn't there before, but it is there now. Ultimately, I want England to win. I'd love England to win a tournament in my lifetime. None of us are getting any younger.
No.
You know, I'd love, for example, you know, we do this show. We're football fans as well, right? We're England fans as well. And my granddad's 89 years old. I'd love him to have seen England win a tournament again last night. You know, my uncle, who inspired me into what liking football, he died like a few years ago, never seeing England win as an adult. You know, he was desperate for it. I'd love for him to do it for him as well. But we've all got these personal stories. Everyone's journey's different. So ultimately, we want them to win because we want that glory and want to be able to kind of say, this means a lot to us. But we should be very proud of what this England team are able to do. And if it can continue, as Vish and you are saying, Marcus, throughout, and people know what's expected of them and they can preserve that, it'll kind of be a matter of time, because it's showing that it's not just the fact that we've got really talented players and we've invested in our youth and we've got this whole much more joined up thinking, but that the culture means that they are set up to achieve. And not everyone can win. We talked about Belgium. They've not won a thing. But they've done well. They've shone brightly, as you've said. And if England can go that one step further, it'll be even better.
As they say, if something's good, it's never gone.
Exactly. Exactly.
Gentlemen, looking back on the tournament, and it's been a great tournament. It really has.
Really has,
It's been absolutely brilliant.
Ever since it started in 2020.
Was it worth the wait? It's been, straight from the off, the Italians, they were involved in the first game of the tournament and the last game of the tournament, and gave an incredible account of themselves, you know, but straight from the off in Rome, with a bit of Nessun Dorma, what a start it was. But throughout the tournament, some great games. I mean, two of the best games, of course, you know, France, Switzerland, and Spain, Croatia, on the same day.
Amazing. That's the best day of tournament football I've ever seen.
Well, but perhaps the last day of the, I'll say the last day, as if it's a season, the climax of the group of death. With Hungary and Germany, and what a day that was. And there's some great forgotten goals, like Benzema's.
Patrick Schick.
Didn't actually matter in terms of Benzema.
Marcus, ask Vish about the little car.
The little car. I'm talking about Benzema and Pogba's goals against France, Switzerland, just to get that out. But yes, go on. The little car. You enjoy
the little car. We all want to talk about the little car.
Yeah.
I mean, it's brilliant, wasn't it?
It came from nowhere.
Yeah, that's right.
You didn't expect it. What is this? Yeah. I was thinking, you know,
what is that?
was it a protest or something?
Our predictions are going to come out. I think over social media, you were saying before. But you know, I wrote a few things in there that, you know, of a mad shit that we were going to see. Didn't come close to a little car coming onto the pitch and delivering the
You'd
football.
You'd have to have quite the creative imagination to have predicted that. Yeah. Also, so I look forward to Pete.
I also quite like the, you know, gay rights was quite a big factor during the tournament, because of not just the fact that it corresponded with Pride Month, but also certain issues that people had bringing in rainbow flags to certain places, notably Hungary. And I quite like that yesterday UEFA thought, well, why don't can we just commit them that we save up all our gay for the last game? Because this really camp opening ceremony, little car coming on in rainbow colours, love all that.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to say though, and this might sound a bit twee, but fucking fair play to the players. Obviously, you know, they're in privileged positions at the best of times because they do something we love and a lot of them get paid very well for it. But after the relentless slog of the last 12, 13 months, to have done what they've done, to have entertained us so, it's remarkable, really.
It it's been very entertaining overall, hasn't it?
Yeah. It has, yeah.
I hope they get a fucking rest.
Yeah. Very few stinkers.
Absolutely right. And it was great that the a goalkeeper, despite all the goals going in, a goalkeeper's player of the tournament.
For one of the most exciting teams as well.
Yeah.
They were joint top scorers with Spain, Italy with 13 goals, and he gets it.
And he's the player of the tournament, my goodness. My goodness. By the way, don't forget that before the tournament, all eight of us at the Football Ramble, we painstakingly put together our predictions for Euro 2020. You can find out how we all got on by checking Football Ramble social media accounts. Search Football Ramble on Twitter and Insta to find us there. So that's where our predictions will be. Yeah. I know that's an enjoyable part of it.
I didn't want the indignity of reading that out on the show.
Well, if you're going to send any abuse, as we said before on the show, send it to Andy Brassel for steering us all wrong.
Exactly.
He never steered me wrong.
I cannot tell you how much I hope he picked Turkey to win it.
He would have had the maybe dark horse.
We never see each other's predictions, I'll be as interested to see as all the listeners are. Mm-hmm. And if Brassel has gone Turkey to win the whole thing, I think we should sack him.
Yeah,
I think we should literally sack him.
France Turkey final.
Yeah, although I think sacking Andy Brassel, we would be machine gunning ourselves,
causing ourselves more problems. Yeah.
Oh dear. But there we are, ladies and gentlemen. It's been incredible. It's been emotional. It has. Thank you so much again for journeying with us through this tournament.
Absolutely.
My goodness, to see England in a final was just something I never thought I would see. Perhaps.
Yeah.
But roll on Qatar.
Yeah.
Hey, well, we'll have some local support. And I'll tell you something. The reason why I say that, the spectre of the feast in Qatar, he'll come good for us. Old Richard Keys.
Yeah.
He'll
be
there.
He's his whole life for this.
And I'll tell you something. If we cannot win a tournament where Richard Keys is putting a bloody good word in for us.
I'll tell you what. Richard Keys has moved to Qatar, you know, literally years before this tournament. To position himself front and centre.
Yeah.
For when it rolls around.
Uh-huh.
At the behest, but basically what he's done in return for that is he's essentially made himself the fact that he can't go back to his own country.
We've got to go to him. We've got to qualify first, by the way.
I hope it's worth it, Richard. I hope he can qualify as well. Yeah. But what we should say is the way you said that, Marcus, was like we'll be back for the World Cup. I mean, we probably are going to cover the Premier League next season as well. You know, it's not that we are going to be back in about 2 weeks' time or something.
Also, it felt like you were announcing him as the future dignitary. We got Tom Cruise on Sunday and Richard Keys.
Yeah. Driving the little car.
Yeah. Who? Oh, imagine him in the little
car. The football ramble, Richard.
I've never heard of them.
Deary me. Well, we are taking a break here at the Football Ramble for the next 2 weeks, but tomorrow and Wednesday, we're bringing you our favourite clips from throughout the Euros. After that, we're showcasing some of the best football content from across the Stack Network until Friday, 23rd of July. You'll hear some of our bonus episodes from our Patreon archives, as well as some of our favourite episodes this season from Football Ramble Presents and Between the Lines with Melissa Reddy. We'll be back with a brand new season of the Ramble schedule on Monday, 26th of July.
Not much of a pre-season for us. Not much of a break for us.
Well,
2 weeks.
It's just felt like a holiday during these.
What
Euros.
A joy! What a joy!
Absolutely. Should we go and see Salt Bay? That's what people do on holidays.
Going to Dubai and see. Is he in Dubai?
Doha.
Wow.
Cocktails with Keezy and the boys.
That's what he always does. Wow.
He's a deviant, isn't he?
Yeah. Brassel hates him. I found some.
Yeah, rightly so. Yeah.
I found three people Brassel hates. Two of them can't say.
Yeah,
on
I was going to say. Yeah.
They're in this room.
And one of them is Salt Bay.
Right, okay.
Yeah. I always send him videos of Salt Bay.
That's why he hates him.
Sometimes I send him.
Yeah.
If I'm up late and I know his phone will be on silent, I'll send him a Salt Bay video when it's wet. So the first thing he sees, he goes, "Oh, Luke sent me a message." Mm. And I always get a laughing emoji and fuck off at the end.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. There we are, everybody.
Thank you very much, sir. What a great tournament.
Thank you very much. As I say, bonus content for the meantime, and then we're back on 26th of July.
Can I just say, I'm coming up to a year on the Football Ramble. Maybe I've even ticked over.
You want to go for a drink or something?
What a joy. Thursday's good. But generally, what a joy it's been. I feel like this has been the dessert of what has been a pretty special Premier League season. Thank you for having me. Thanks. I can't wait to get going again.
Well, don't know about you, Marcus, but I thought he was going to put a transfer request in.
Chimbonda-esque.
Out of stock.
He sort of weakened his position in the negotiation table, hasn't he?
Yeah,
but Vish, it's been marvellous.
Yeah.
Part of the furniture.
Yeah, you, Andy, Jules and Kate have all been great. And we're bloody lucky.
It's been
to
fucking
great.
And thank you for the ramble, love from the listeners as well.
Yeah,
been,
yeah. Absolutely. Enjoy. Lovely.
Great. Stick
lovely.
With us, guys. We're going again next season.
Absolutely right. See you then.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.